Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Finding someone on an online Catholic dating site shouldn't be like shopping for a blender. So why do most dating sites leave you feeling like you're shopping for a spouse? At Catholic Singles, we connect members through our unique user polls and activities, which help you discover other members and their personalities and interests. Because you're a person, not a profile picture. So stop shopping and start discerning. Trust your love story to the original Catholic dating site and use the promo code REDBOX at checkout for 20% off at CatholicSingles.com.
Hello and welcome to Real Living the Espirito with Mary Lou Nemecek, and we are continuing to unpack a little bit this prophetic senses and insights and papal insights on the coming nature of hard times coming upon us. It looks like in the year 2020, things that were foretold in the 70s and 80s are actually coming to pass, not only through prophetic insights, through lay people, but also through the understanding of various popes, of recent popes. Okay, I was sharing with you all the prophecy that Ralph Martin gave at the closing mass of the conference that where we were all at in 1975 in Rome, having to do with being prepared for hard times, the things and structures and buildings that that had been standing, the things that we relied on were actually not going to be there anymore. And I remember also saying that, well, I didn't think that was going to happen during my lifetime. It's like, really? Come on. You know, it'll happen. Yeah, sure, it'll happen. God said it. It'll happen. But it's not going to happen, right? It's not going to happen to me, right? I mean, I'm going to have a chance to do my thing. So I kind of put it aside for a while. Went to grad school, got married, started a family, have a ministry. It's like, you know, everything's been fine, right? But enter the year 2020. Which has been really, I think, like no other year. Perhaps war years were like this. I don't know.
We're all looking towards the end of this year, too.
I know, right? It's like, really, what else could happen?
No, yeah,
exactly. Let's not even say that. I'm afraid to say that.
Not go there.
Let's not say that. But the idea that, you know, 2020 has been quite the year. And I don't think anybody, even in November or December of 2019, would have imagined what this year has brought. A worldwide pandemic, and I'm talking worldwide. It's weird when you see people in Calcutta wearing masks, when you see people in the Bahamas wearing masks, when you see people in Australia and New Zealand wearing masks. It's like, oh, this isn't just us. This is everywhere. It was truly a worldwide global pandemic with a universal shutdown, lockdown, that was accompanied because of the fact that people were obligated to be home and not work their jobs by the economy cratering due to a global recession. That was accompanied, of course, by despair. I mean, I read the stories about the number of suicides were up like 100%.
Yes.
Since the onset of the pandemic, people were just terminating themselves because they didn't have any hope. They couldn't see a way forward, you know. Maybe they were living in tiny apartments in New York City and couldn't get out. I mean, who knows? But that was only through April. And then May brought what? International civil unrest, riots, looting. One thing is a demonstration and a protest. Another thing completely are riots, looting, burning, vandalism that accompanied these things. And I don't know about you, Mary Lou, but what the thing that really got me was looking not only at what was happening in Minneapolis and in Chicago and in big cities, but why on earth were people in New Delhi, in Sydney, in Oslo, in Bali, protesting the behavior of a couple of rogue Minneapolis police officers? You just had to worry. You had to wonder how, I mean, I understand global solidarity, but what's with that?
Exactly. It's something that we haven't really seen before. And it's very troubling because it's like people have lost control. Rationality has gone out the door. The simple dialogue to have with another person to express your opinion versus their opinion has taken on a vile set of terms recently, and tolerance is, which is, if everyone understood what tolerance really meant, you wouldn't be tolerant. But being used in today's society, everybody is supposed to be tolerant of the other, and it seems as though people are only tolerant of only their opinion and their stance or their view of history. And it's becoming very frustrating to be able to see society as being civil to each other right now.
Well, and what got me was people in New Delhi protesting things that people in Minneapolis were doing.
Right.
You know, people.
And what happened in Minneapolis was horrible.
Horrendous.
We all understand that.
Horrendous.
And we need to go through the process to punish those who were who did that. But we don't tear society apart because of it.
It was the spark. Really, it was the excuse, I think, that a lot of dark forces were waiting to come out of darkness and to take on an acceptable label that everybody thought was good, right?
Well, and that was because some groups who lay in waiting saw an opportunity to put people out on the streets to start creating turmoil. And that's exactly what happened.
To protest something, anything, you know, at this point. And you kind of wonder, those poor police officers, I feel so bad for the Minneapolis Police Department, for the New York Police Department, for the Chicago Police Department, because for the most part, police officers are paid a pittance and they put their lives on the line every day for the health and the safety of their community. Now, were there a few bad apples? Yes. Did what those guys do was terrible? Yes. Awful, unbelievably dreadful. But why does that mean that we need to tar? It's like when the priests abuse thing, you know, we had several very few priests who were acting in a certain way or complicit bishops or whatever. But that doesn't mean that every single priest or every single religious person, and that they have that whole sort of tarring and feathering a whole community based on the behavior of a few.
Exactly.
And that's what's been called. And not only has it been protesting these unconscionable things that happened that shouldn't happen, but then from there you went to toppling statues, and then you went to rewriting American history. You know, we don't like what these people stood for, so we're going to destroy their statue and we're going to lobby to have them struck from the history books. Which, I don't know who said it, I think is Winston Churchill. People who does not know their history is condemned to repeat it, to repeat the mistakes. Right?
That's right.
So it's just been this kind of qualitative paradigm shift from let's protest an injustice to let's cancel the whole world. Let's not only cancel police departments, let's cancel the statue of Abraham Lincoln and the statue of Jefferson. And then let's cancel the statue of the saints. And then the most recent instances that we've seen are statues of the Blessed Mother and of Jesus. There was just a recent incident of a statue of Jesus that was taken and beheaded. I mean, come on, guys. How did we get from protesting the police department to basically wanting to attack the very religious fiber of our society, which remains Christian until proven otherwise, even if not for very long, right?
Well, what they're saying is that none of those things are essential. The police are not essential.
Religion is not essential.
Jesus is not essential. I mean, this is what society is pushing right now, and we have to start pushing back against that.
They're not only saying they're not essential, they're saying they're evil. That's what gets me. I can understand that people who don't know Jesus and the power of the Holy Spirit might consider church services not essential. But I do not understand where in an era in which Muslim values and symbols are respected to the point where cartoons will cause, remember the famous Danish cartoons and all that stuff, are causing people to die. We have to respect the symbols of some religion, but we feel impunity that with the cancel culture, we can actually abolish religion. We can abolish Christianity. What the heck?
But by that essential is that, you know, is history really essential? And, you know, I'm talking about accurate history. to kind of brush that aside, to that doesn't matter anymore. We're just going to live in this moment and on forward, and none of that mattered.
And not learn any lessons
right
from the people who came before, right? So the cancel culture is a movement that seeks to abolish all history, all religious faith, and all perceived inequality. But, you know, inequality, after the obvious glaring examples, is kind of in the eye of the beholder. Because what about the put upon, white Anglo-Saxon males, for instance, you know? Or God forbid if you're a dead white Anglo-Saxon male and you did something important. Forget it. You don't matter anymore. No matter what you accomplished, even if you campaigned against slavery, you have a statue, we're going to pull it down. So again, I don't know about a conspiracy theory, but I do see dark forces planning to unmoor Western civilization from its foundations.
Exactly.
Tell me I'm wrong.
And by doing so, it's taking control over groups of people, of organizations, of government, where is it going to stop? Mm-hmm.
So in the article I wrote, the cancel culture in the United States joins the past iconoclasm. What's iconoclasm? It's a destruction of a picture or a figure or an icon, which was accomplished quite effectively by Mao Zedong. You remember Mao Zedong in the Cultural Revolution of the 40s and 50s and 60s, where centuries, millennia of priceless Chinese history and art were destroyed in the name of communism, in the name of moving forward, right? And what about ISIS? ISIS in most recently in Iraq destroying priceless parts of Babylon and Nineveh and, oh my gosh, things that have survived for 3,000 years and now these knuckleheads have to blow it up in the name of ideology?
That's right.
An international patrimony? It just seems so wrong. But it is, on the other point, when they're trying to expunge history, what are they trying to replace it with? Because eventually you're going to have to replace it with something. And this anarchy and nihilism, what's anarchy? Anarchy is no rule of law. And nihilism is nothing matters. Nothing matters. Like Nietzsche was a nihilist, right? And so I said, the minute you see, when anarchy and nihilism kind of crawl out of the darkness and are seen in the spotlight, you can see that that is the agenda of the pit of hell. The agenda of the pit of hell is what? Burn it down. Destroy it. It doesn't matter what the contributions are. Let's just destroy it for the sake of destroying it. And that's scary. So the immediate incendiary volatility of the unrest took the focus off the pandemic, which may have been part of the deal, I don't know, and onto the failure of political and media paradigms. And yet, if you look at the words that Father Mike Scanlon gave as his impression from what God was telling him in 1976 and 1980, this is what he says verbatim, open quote, "Are you ready for the churches to be shut? For no law, no order, no protection." Hey, that sentence right there.
Right. It describes what's going on.
Does that creep you out or what? Churches have been shut. No law, no order, no protection. Well, when you call for the police department who's there to defend you to go away, there will really be no law, no order, no protection. For cities and dioceses to go bankrupt, for the people of God to have to choose between the world and me, to rely on smaller community of believers, there will be purification and persecution among my people. They will have to stand for what you believe. You will have to choose between the world and me. You will have to choose what word you will follow and whom you will respect. That's an interesting sentence. You will have to choose what word you will follow and whom you will respect instead of existing parish, school, and governmental structures. Sin will be called sin. This is a time of judgment and purification. So the fact that the Lord gave these words to Father Mike in 1976 and 1980, and that they actually occurred in 2020, shows me that God is in charge, right? God is not shocked. He's not surprised, right? He knows that all this is going on. He has a perfect plan. So every single thing that happens in history has already happened in God's eyes because he stands outside of time. So every moment of time is now. He will never be taken by surprise. Thank God, right? As all of us did, right?
Yeah.
And then I thought this was interesting. These are the warning of given in 1978, so 3 years after the Rome conference and a couple of years after Father Mike's first prophecy. This is Karol Wojtyla, Archbishop of Krakow, or Cardinal at that point, in 1978, right before he became Pope. He visited the United States. And this is what he said to the gathering of the U.S. bishops in November 9th, 1978. Quote, "We are now standing in the face of the greatest historical confrontation humanity has gone through. I do not think that wide circles of the American society or wide circles of the Christian community realize this fully. We are now facing the final confrontation between the church and the anti-church, the gospel versus the anti-gospel." And this is the comforting piece. "This confrontation lies within the plans of divine providence." So you all don't get your knickers in a twist, as the English say, because God is in charge.
Right.
But just because he's in charge doesn't mean that it's all going to be roses and pink ribbons. It's going to be challenging. It's going to be hard because it's a historical confrontation between the church and the anti-church, the gospel versus the anti-gospel. And you and I have seen these things in our day.
Yes, we have.
Talk about the anti-gospel. Talk about, well, I'm not going to get political, so I'm not going to say anything. But, you know, just look around you, see what the platforms are of the major political parties, and then tell me what's an anti-gospel and what's an anti-church. Okay. Joseph Ratzinger, before becoming Benedict XVI, said very similar things. There was a Voices and Views article in 1969. Quote, "The church is facing very hard times. The real crisis has scarcely begun." This was written...
1969.
I know, but it was written a year and a half after the Summer of Love. It was written a year and a half after all the unrests of 1967 and 1968,
mm-hmm.
after the sexual revolution and all that stuff. "The real crisis has scarcely begun. We will have to count on terrific upheavals. From the crisis of today, the church of tomorrow will emerge, a church that has lost more and that will be smaller, a more spiritualized and simplified church." And so that makes sense, doesn't it? It might be scary, but it makes sense.
But he also said in there, to put this more positively, "The future of the church, once again, as always, will be reshaped by saints."
That's right.
So we're watching for those saints to appear.
And don't watch for Padre Pio to arrive. Mm-hmm. And watch for your own sanctification. I mean, I think we are the saints that he's called upon.
Right.
We are the ones who need to step up to the plate. Right. So the above magisterial words through the Pope and the prophetic words, they all match up to say one thing. Be ready. Judgment and purification are coming. Be ready. Be ready. God is warned. Why would he warn us if not to give us a time to prepare, to be vigilant? But yeah. The big picture is that today is a time of darkness, but it's also a time for us to be witnesses. Right.
So we have to look for the opportunity of what we can do.
What the papal words and also the prophetic insights are, it could be construed as private revelation, which means that it's not something the church says you have to believe. The church says you have to believe the scriptures, which are public revelation, and magisterial teaching, and of course, oral sacred tradition. But, you know, people can differ as to whether they should take the words of Our Lady in Lourdes, whether they should take Our Lady in Fatima, whether, you know, the various locutions by Padre Pio, St. Faustina, etc., should be taken as something that we have to believe incontrovertibly. No, they're private revelation, which means that they need to be tested. And Paul in 1 Thessalonians 5 says that exactly, that exact same. He says, don't despise prophecy, which is what a lot of people today do, is go, "Well, what does he know? Is that telling the future? Is that a fortune teller?" Or you have like church officials who are scared to death of the gifts of the Holy Spirit because they can't make any sense out of them. So what do they want to do? They want to ignore them out of fear, or even maybe eliminate them because they don't understand them.
Mm-hmm.
But what Paul says is, do not despise the words of the prophets. Test everything and hold fast to what is good.
It's good.
Right? So the idea is to test private revelation and prophecy against the fullness of what we know to be the public revelation, the scriptures, the oral sacred tradition, and magisterial teaching. So next show, we're going to unpack a little bit how these private revelation hold up with the words of Jesus in the gospel. Thank you for joining us.
Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small batch artisan coffee using top tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/breadboxmedia. Experience coffee like never before.